welcome into a big ACC heavy drive. The head coach of the reigning ACC champion Seminoles, Leonard Hamilton, will share his memories of Big John Thompson later this hour. And both Tubby Smith and West Durham will join soon after that. But we begin with college football because, Robert, we've got ACC kickoff times for next weekend. Also, fitting with the trend of 2020, something that has never happened before seems to be inevitable to happen soon. College game day is almost a lock to make its first ever visit to the Triad for Clemson-Wake Forest on September the 12th.
No way, man. You got to be kidding me.
It's true. It's the only logical choice among the games being played on the 12th. Remember, the SEC isn't playing until September 26th. There are no Big Ten games unless the President of the United States pulls off a miracle. More on that later on. The Pac-12 isn't going to be playing this fall. The Big 12 isn't playing conference games until a little bit later on in the month. So really, when you look at the calendar, September the 12th, there are only five Power 5 matchups to choose between. Syracuse, North Carolina, that's going to be a noon kickoff time in Chapel Hill. Hard pass. Duke at Notre Dame, okay, you got the Irish. Maybe you want to give them the spotlight, their first ever ACC game. It's going to be on NBC, though. They have the rights to the home games. Usually, if you're ABC, Disney, ESPN, you want to promote games that are on your own network, so I don't see that happening. Georgia Tech's playing at Florida State. Jeff Collins' second year, Mike Norvell, his first game as the Seminoles coach. Both teams are unranked. I don't know if that's what you want to be highlighting. Then there's Clemson-Wake Forest. Already put in prime time, 7:30. I know any company is trying to limit the amount of travel. Kirk Herbstreit, it's not abnormal for him in a normal year to go from one site doing college game day, say for an SEC game that's going to be broadcast by the folks at CBS, and then travel somewhere else later on that night. But if he's already going to be calling the game with Chris Fowler, why not keep him there? The number one team of the country, you can showcase that. I've talked to producers of the show, something they consider, something they value very strongly. Where haven't we been before? Well, they've never been to Winston-Salem, so it just makes too much sense that college game day doesn't come to the Triad for the first time ever. But here's what I'm getting on social media. Wake Forest fans feel like if they don't get a chance to go to the show, if they don't get a chance to watch the game, it was announced this morning, by the way, Wake Forest not going to have games or not going to have fans for their opener against Clemson on the 12th. They feel apprehensive about having college game day show up when fans aren't there to lift their signs and do what you do at game day. And I get that feeling. If you're a Wake Forest fan, I'd love to give your get your thoughts on the subject. 336-777-1600 on Twitter at SportsHubTriad. It's almost like the Appalachian State game not being played. John Curry was on this show telling us the reason why we're looking at maybe moving off of that game is because it doesn't feel right to have the Mountaineers play the Demon Deacons, a rivalry game that matters around here, without fans being able to attend it. So by the same logic, how do we feel about college game day potentially making its first trip to Winston-Salem with no fans allowed to attend it? That's an interesting deal. I'm sure maybe there might be some fan interaction. Of course, you could do it virtually. Maybe you can socially distance a little bit and have the signs still held up. Maybe you can submit the signs to somebody and then they can lift them up. Then you got a producer choosing which one's good and which one isn't. That kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it, Robert?
Yeah, that's what I watch for, is those borderline signs that maybe shouldn't have made it on the air, but nobody was there to say no.
I think even without fans, it will be terrific for Winston-Salem and terrific for Wake Forest if college game day comes to town. You still get Dave Clawson on the show in all likelihood. You're talking about a two-hour, maybe three-hour commercial for what Wake Forest is all about. It's the official start of the college football season when the Power 5 starts playing, when Oklahoma is kicking off, and apparently they're going to charge in pay-per-view $54.99 for Oklahoma fans to watch them face Missouri State.
Is that every week? Is that a one-time fee?
I think it's only for this game.
Oh, God.
I think it's only for their game against Missouri State.
That's pretty steep.
I'd be worried about karma. The last time I remember Oklahoma doing that, they played Army at home, and they were supposed to blow out Army. This was a few years ago. And it goes to overtime. So everybody's trying to find a way to watch this game because nobody's paying for the pay-per-view when you have all these options otherwise. So it was one of the few examples of a game featuring a top five team in the country I couldn't watch because I wasn't going to pay pay-per-view to watch it. So getting back to Wake Forest, though, it's going to be a big deal. Lee Corso, I think since he's never had the opportunity to put on a Deacon head, he should just do it.
Just put it on.
He's 85 years old. There's no reason you can justify picking Wake Forest to beat Clemson, but just to stir something up, since there are no fans and you're 85 bleeping years old, Corso, just imagine what Corso would look like with that head on. He put on an NC State head before. I don't know for certain if he put on a Tar Heel before. I'd be willing to bet he didn't put on a Blue Devil at any point, but he's never had the opportunity to put on a Demon Deacon. That would be great. I'm just curious, though. With the Demon Deacon head, they have the bow tie that's stapled to the chin. Is that included on the helmet? Will you still have the bow tie at the bottom? Or when is the cutoff between what is a helmet and the rest of the Demon Deacon costume?
These are the questions that I want answered. I don't want the sports stuff. I want mascot questions. So maybe they could like get him a Velcro bow tie and just a top hat, and he could be the Corso Demon Deacon, and he wouldn't even need the hat, or the mask, rather.
Yeah, I put this poll question out on social media. I'm interested in your thought on it. What is the better sports studio show, College Game Day or Inside the NBA? Those are the two that go head-to-head for the Sports Emmy almost every single year. Inside the NBA, TNT, Ernie Johnson, Kenny the Jet Smith, Chuck Barkley, Shaq, or College Game Day. It feels like the answers here are going to be on racial lines. It does feel like that a little bit, where if you're not a big NBA fan, you might be thinking, all right, it's college football. If you're not, you know, if you're not a big college football fan and you only watch the NBA, it's Inside the NBA. There are people who don't watch that show outside of the playoffs, so they might not think of it. While every week of the college football season, there is real urgency. If a team loses, well, that could be it. I still think it's game day just because it's an event. There are far fewer college game day shows than there are Inside the NBA shows.
I would agree with that. But if it's something I'm going to watch, then I would probably watch Inside the NBA. But if it's something on in the background of a tailgate, then yeah, I throw on College
Here's
Game
the thing. Day. Here's the thing. There's no personality on College Game Day I care to hear from more than Charles Barkley. But that's kind of the beauty of Game Day. The appeal of the show isn't anybody on the show. It's the only pregame show that legitimately pulls off being the event. It's almost like a sport in its own right. Watching Game Day, watching the signs, it's the fans. The fans are the ones performing for you, trying to pick out the signs, trying to see what they're going to do. The timing of it, you're waking up in the morning, it's getting you ready for football, while Inside the NBA, hey, I just got off work. When's this basketball game going to start? I don't want to stay up too late. All right, shut up, Kenny. I just want to watch this game, okay? I just want to watch Game 7 tonight, Utah versus Denver. When are you going to stop talking? You can vote on that poll at Sports Hub Triad, at Josh Graham Radio. I got my ACC preseason ballot, my all-ACC ballot that I'll share with you in about 5 minutes. And I just thought about something else. How are Notre Dame fans processing just the concept of a preseason all-ACC team? Notre Dame fans, they are learning how to share in real time, learning how to share the spotlight. It's almost like moving in with somebody you've been dating for a handful of years. You know them very well, but you really don't know what it's like to live with this person until you do. I don't care how many sleepovers you've had. I don't care how many nights out of the week you're hanging out. You don't really know what it's like to live with somebody until you do. And I think Notre Dame fans, they're going to learn that this year. Irish fans, I can't wait to see them Friday when Packer and Durham are announcing the All-ACC preseason teams. They get to get fired up about their field corner or punter not getting preseason All-ACC recognition. They're new to this. They've never had that feeling before. Being independent, you've never been slighted in that way. You're Notre Dame, you got your NBC contract, you don't have to share that limelight with anybody. Now you got to share it with Syracuse. I wish the Irish came to an ACC kickoff in Charlotte, like an ACC preseason event. They wouldn't be the center of attention. I could see that bothering everybody involved with the Irish. Because Clemson, they're going to get more shine than Notre Dame. North Carolina, because it's in Charlotte, they are the flagship school, so to speak. Mack Brown, Hall of Fame coach. Brian Kelly doing Radio Row hits, getting annoyed with that. He probably hasn't had to do that since he was at Cincinnati. Oh, and then we get to hear from Irish fans alleging Carolina bias of the ACC. Waiting for that. Oh, why do we have to play in Charlotte? We got to go up against Clemson or North Carolina in the championship game. They have a chance to get more fans, if there are fans for the championship game in December. Oh, league officials, they're all in Greensboro. Mike Bray, he learned that lesson last year. The lines you can cross and the lines you can't when alleging preferential treatment there. Like I said, Leonard Hamilton, he's going to join us in a little over 15 minutes. But coming up, my ACC Players of the Year selections feature a Tiger and a Tar Heel, but none of them are quarterbacks. I'll reveal my ACC football ballot next on The Drive.
Everybody, listen up!
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I can't believe this. This is insane.
Whenever we lose a figure that carries the weight of John Thompson's name, you can't really get the full breast of the reaction in just one day. Yesterday, on the Adam Gold Show, hearing from Roy Williams, hearing from Coach Boeheim at Syracuse, and we continue to get some more reaction as we're being joined by Tubby Smith, head coach of High Point, of course. Considering how long you've been in basketball, you have tremendous perspective on the sport and what certain figures represent in it. When you're thinking about John Thompson with the news yesterday of him passing at 78 years old, Tubby, what do you ultimately think his legacy is?
Well, I think his, I mentioned before, his legacy is about, you know, I guess the beginning, being a pioneer, being the first African-American to win a national championship, black coach to win a national championship, and then and how you set a standard of conduct. By that I mean in the way you coach, the way you respond to certain things, and then he was always a guy that felt called to action, and that's what I always appreciate about him. He was a real role model and a hero for many young coaches like myself.
I've heard a lot of great stories over the last 24 hours or so, speaking to how candid John can be, at times how profane John can be. I just want to know if you have a funny or a good story you've thought of over the last day or so regarding Big John Thompson.
Well, every time we would come in contact with each other, I'm from Southern Maryland, and he's from the D.C. He's from Washington, D.C. originally, but he had relatives in Southern Maryland area, and we were always you know, discuss that. But and I always wanted a place on the Potomac or the Patuxent River there, and he has a place in Solomon Island, right off in Calvert County, and some of my relatives there. So I would always ride by there and say, "Look, man, I was over. Look, John, I was over on Solomon Island. I'll just be happy to cut your grass or do something just to stay a while, you know, just so when I go home, I have a place to stay." But he always wanted to sell it to me. And when I was young, he said, "Well, you can afford it now, Tubby," when I got the job in Kentucky. But he never parted with that particular, I guess, little place that he would go to get away in southern Maryland. So, but it was something that as we discussed, I think we're related in some form or fashion because his great grandmother was from southern Maryland, and my great grandmother was a Green. His was a Green also. So we're somewhere down the line we're related. But he was always, I love John because he was always, he would speak his mind, and when he was one of the innovators or first guy to really start the Black Coaches Association, which we now we call the Black Coaches United group. And we had him on a Zoom call. His son, John Thompson III, allowed him to speak to us just briefly and encourage us to refocus and be a part of the change that needs to happen during this time. So we were very fortunate to get to hear him speak just in the last month before he passed.
Tubby Smith with us here, High Point basketball coach on Sports Up Triad. You mentioned part of his legacy is going to be he's the first Black coach to win an NCAA men's basketball championship. But what always strikes me, and the video is very applicable, or accessible, I should say, Coach Thompson, when he was asked about it after that game in 1984, said he doesn't want that to be attached to him because it somehow suggests that he's the first Black coach who was capable of winning a title in 84. And he made sure to give a lot of love to, here in the Triad, somebody like Big House Gaines at Winston-Salem State and others. What does that mean to you as somebody who accomplished something similar, being an African-American coach who won a national title?
Well, he's like, and if to get to that pinnacle and reach a championship we have done, you're so grateful for the opportunity, but you're also thankful for the people. And I think that's what he was, he knew that there were many coaches just like myself. There are a lot of great coaches that really never get a chance to win championships, much less national championships, but are doing great where they are and leading the young men and leading them to have successful careers and lives after basketball. Because that's why we got in it. I mean, he was a high school teacher, and I was a high school teacher, high school coach. So those things are, and you didn't do it for the money. You do it because you love the game. And I think that's what John was saying. There were people like John McClendon, who actually coached at North Carolina Central and actually won two national championships at Tennessee State. And he was an inventor, innovator as far as a fast break is concerned. He ended up being one of the first Black coaches in the NBA. So people like Al, you know, that coached around the area. We mentioned Big House Gaines, who I was fortunate enough to be at his memorial service when he passed and had a picture taken with John Thompson. And so there are a lot of great coaches that have, African-American and Black coaches, have coached in the state and around the country. So he was, and that's what you appreciate about John Thompson. He was always reaching and trying to give credit where credit was due, especially and to inform that, listen, I probably shouldn't be the first Black, but since but I'm standing on the shoulders of other coaches of color that have that led, that paved the way for him and for people like myself, the John Thompson and Nolan Richardson and John Chaney, George Raveling, people like that, that really paved the way for many of us to get these opportunities.
Tubby, appreciate you sharing the stories with us today on John Thompson. I hope the next time we catch up, we get a chance to talk about all those things you were talking about with High Point and what you're trying to do and getting the basketball season off the ground. Stay safe, and thanks so much for sharing your memories of John Thompson.
Well, I appreciate you, Josh, and you do the same. Stay safe, stay healthy.
You got it. That is Tubby Smith, High Point head basketball coach, national championship winner. When you look at the history of college basketball, there are not many coaches who are African-American who have won the biggest prize in D1 men's basketball. John Thompson in 1984, Nolan Richardson in 1994. There's Tubby Smith, his championship with the Kentucky Wildcats in the 90s as well. Then Kevin Ollie winning it with the UConn Huskies in the last decade. Those are the four African-American college basketball coaches to win a national championship. It's a very exclusive club. Leonard Hamilton, we hope, will get his opportunity to win a national championship. He's gotten close. If you missed our conversation with Coach Ham from last hour, you can find that on our podcast channel. It's where you can find the Best Of podcast too. Just search The Drive with Josh Graham, and you can find on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, a really neat extended chat with Leonard Hamilton, who was incredibly close with the late, great John Thompson. We'll talk with Wes Durham a little bit later on for the ACC Network to get a look at ACC Player of the Year nominees. I'll give you my two cents on that in about 10 minutes. But coming up, why College Game Day coming to the Triad for the first time ever is almost a guarantee. Keep it here on The Drive.
No mercy, no pity, no fear.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
He's an extremely hard worker. Nobody works harder than Cam does. He's here early, he stays late, and he works very hard.
That was Bill Belichick on Sirius NFL Radio yesterday talking about Cam and how hard he works. And it's funny, when Cam initially signed with New England, the reaction the public had was the same reaction Cam did. How are we going to mesh together? How is it going to look? Cam told Todd Gurley, Victor Cruz, and Odell Beckham that in a video earlier this summer. But it seems pretty clear over the last month, Cam not only fits in New England, he's won over Bill Belichick. Because in that interview, Bill Belichick, he gushed about Cam. What's the book on Belichick, Robert? He's rigid. He's crusty at points.
Old.
And I don't know if, yeah, he is older, but he's somebody who doesn't mind interjecting and giving you a short answer if he doesn't like a question. Even if you ask a good question, he's probably going to give you a short answer. When he was asked about Cam in this interview, He spouted off for 2.5 minutes. He gave a 2.5 minute answer just talking about Cam and how much Cam has impressed him. I think what it comes down to is this. Belichick values hard work. His saying is do your job. The rest is window dressing to him. He could care less about the rest of it, just as long as he knows you're somebody who's going to work hard and do your job. And that's where I think a lot of the media misses on Cam Newton. Even some fans misses on Cam because it's really easy to focus on that window dressing when Cam's dressing different than any quarterback we've ever seen, wearing all these outfits, the Drip Chronicles, as he calls it. He has all this flair, doing the dab after first downs, the touchdown celebrations, the Superman giving the ball to fans. There are people who look at that and conflate that with not being a hard worker. When the truth is, the reason why Cam's that good, the reason Cam went to Florida, reason the Cam was awesome in college and awesome in the NFL, winning an MVP with Carolina in 15, was because he never ignored the work. He always put that in. That's why you haven't seen a teammate other than Kelvin Benjamin, maybe, calling out Cam Newton his entire time in Charlotte. Nobody's called out Cam. They love Cam. It's personal for Cam. Cam's not the most mature guy. He gets along better with kids than he's ever gotten along with authority and adults, but it means he has a really strong relationship with guys in the locker room. The vibes that Cam brings to a locker room, it's perfect for what New England needs post-Brady, I think. 2020, it's been a rough year for everybody. In the football context, though, is there a team in the NFL that's had a worse offseason than New England? Like the Patriots, not only do they lose in the first round of the postseason, the wild card round, they lose Tom Brady, and then nobody had more opt-outs than New England did about a month ago. Yes, Robert.
I would raise the Washington football team.
That's true. The Washington football team won. The New England Patriots, too. That's a very good correction on your part there. But I wouldn't blame players for thinking, oh, goodness, this is going to be a rough year. This is going to be rough. We don't have Tom anymore. He won all those Super Bowls. He's the greatest. All these guys are opting out. Dante Hightower, for example. Key players on this team. What's going to happen? Well, then here comes Cam. And he's cheery, and he's dancing to music, dancing to Kirk Franklin, having a lot of fun. He's the perfect guy you want in that room. Working hard, former MVP, well-liked by his players, or by his teammates, excuse me. Just a really positive vibe. Like, here's more from Bill Belichick. Like, we couldn't find the entire answer or play the entire answer because it would be too long, which is something I don't think we've ever been able to say for Belichick. But here he is talking more about Cam Newton and the vibe I was just describing.
You know, he's got a great personality. He gets along with everybody. He's, very social and has a great, presence, whether it's in a small room of a couple people or, in a bigger group. And he's highly competitive. He's very, very competitive on the field. He always wants to, do his best and do better than the guys competing against. And you see that from everybody's competitive, but I think there are different degrees of it. And, it looks like I would, based on what I've seen, I would put him in the, top echelon of that.
Woo! Cam Newton in the top echelon of competitor, of hard work. He's going to be the starter. Belichick, he hasn't beaten Cam Newton before. I don't think that's a small thing. Belichick's always been impressed with Cam because he's 0-2 against him. How many quarterbacks in the league do you think can say, I played the Patriots multiple times under Belichick, and I haven't lost? Cam Newton can. And those were great Patriot teams he went up against. There was that Monday Night Classic, the Steve Smith, ice up, son, ice up, to Aqib Talib. And then there was the game in Foxborough where Stephon Gilmore, before he became an NFL defensive MVP, he was getting carved up. Carolina had the game-winning field goal by Graham Gano. I don't think that's a small thing. I think Cam not only fits in New England, Belichick, he's been won over by the former MVP, the former Carolina Panther great. All right, here's what I want to do before we get to Wes Durham. He's going to join us from the ACC Network, also doubles as the voice of the Atlanta Falcons as well. I want to play a game here. Let's knock out every NFL division, but rather than me being incredibly expansive on things, which we can do when we have a four-hour show, let's do this. I'll give you five words or less, then I'll give you a short explanation why for each division. Each division, I'll give you five words or less to define the division. Robert, just throw them my way.
Let's start with the Panthers in the NFC South.
NFC South, best quarterback play in football. I get Pat Mahomes is the best in the league, Lamar Jackson, the MVP a year ago, but when you got Brady, you got Matt Ryan, you have that Drew Brees guy who's pretty good, and Teddy Bridgewater, who I think is going to exceed expectations. It's the best quarterback play in the entire NFL. I'm still probably leaning New Orleans as the favorite in that division, though, until I see them knocked off.
All right, what you got for the NFC East?
Wow. How about Fly Eagles Fly? They Last year, they made the playoffs. Who was Carson Wentz throwing the ball to?
Greg Ward Jr.
Greg Ward Jr., former quarterback at Houston. Like, he's throwing the ball to garden gnomes out there and cardboard cutouts, and they're making it to the playoffs.
I mean, that's who's carrying the ball for him, too.
It's amazing.
Boston Scott.
Yeah, Boston Scott. Great Boston Scott! Like, the Eagles, they're going to be healthier. Knock on wood. I know Dallas is going to get a lot of the attention. I think Washington's going to be better than some people think. Fly, Eagles, fly. I think it might be the most talented roster in the NFC.
Eagles already got bit a little bit with Andre Dillard with the injury bug, but they got Jason Peters, so I hear you. NFC West.
Super Bowl hangover is real. I think Seattle's going to win this division. When you look at the last decade, the Super Bowl, the team that loses the Super Bowl doesn't go to the playoffs generally the next year. I'd be surprised if San Francisco missed the playoffs with a hangover, since you consider there are seven teams making it in each conference now. But I think Seattle adding Jamal Adams, that's a really big deal. DK Metcalf going into year two. Russell Wilson, the best quarterback in the league, not named Patrick Mahomes. So I think Super Bowl hangover is real. I like Seattle to win the division. Who knows? It could be three teams getting in from the NFC West, maybe the LA Rams sneaking in.
And wrapping up the NFC, let's go to the NFC North.
NFC North, if four unpredictable football teams. Who's the least predictable of those four, you think? I think it's Chicago. You were going to say the Lions.
No, I agree with you. I think it's the Bears.
Like, it went 8-8 last year. I could see them being improved from what they were, or I could see them being an absolute dumpster fire with Mitchell Trubisky and having to admit they were wrong halfway through the year. But if it gets bad enough, I think Nick Foles can play quarterback and do so serviceably. Okay, let's knock these out a little quicker, Robert.
That's on you. AFC South.
Playoff or bust for O'Brien.
AFC West.
Pat Mahomes is scary.
AFC North.
You know your directions, don't you?
Yeah, for sure.
No more excuses for Baker. I'm done hearing them. No more excuses for Baker Mayfield.
And give us the last one.
AFC East?
Sure, yeah.
Same old, same old. I like the Patriots to win that division. I think it's going to be New England beating the Bills out for that division. I know it's the popular pick, but I think it's going to be Cam and Belichick. McDaniel's more motivated than he's ever been. Belichick more motivated. Cam more motivated than he's ever been. All right. I want to get back to college. We'll talk John Thompson. We'll talk ACC football ballots. We'll talk about the schedule being out with the ACC Network's West Durham next on The Drive.
Turn it up! They came to see us! Let's go!
Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
37-yard field goal. This is it. This is it right here. It's already. The snap's good. The whole thing.
Oh!
The kick is off! The Mountaineers are going to try to
it's
take it
God
back to the Big House!
John Sale to the Big House!
20, 50,
ah! 10!
The Mountaineers have just beaten the Michigan Wolverines!
13 years ago today, the Big Ten Network at noon with a kickoff of Appalachian State beating the best team in the Big Ten, in the Big House, Appalachian State, and that's David Jackson on the call. I forget who was on the color commentary back then.
Dave Brown. Steve Brown.
Steve Brown,
the former quarterback.
And it's just great. I used to love listening to David Jackson go down to the sideline and say, "Dad, what do you got down there?" Which is great. I'm just interested. Before I figure it's a great segue to get to an anniversary of sorts for the ACC Network. You guys just crossed 1 year with Packer and Durham, of course. But before we get into the ACC, has Roddy Jones or Dave Archer ever trampled on you like that during a play-by-play call?
Roddy, no. Arch... No, Arch and I tend to have ongoing conversations at times during the game. I mean, there's been times where plays have gone on, and there's a line on YouTube. You can find it if you want to. It was a preseason game several years ago where I said that J.D. McKissic, who was trying to make the team, ultimately I think made it as a practice squad guy, later appeared in regular season play with Seattle. he had returned all these kicks in college, like punts and kickoffs for touchdown. And I said in the preseason watching practice one day, I said, McKissick's going to take one back during the preseason. And so Arch decided that he would come out of the break starting the second half with saying, you know, Wes has become a bit of a soothsayer, you know, at camp, saying that J.D. McKissick would, you know, return a kick for a touchdown. Well, sure enough, Washington puts it in the air. They kick it to McKissick to start the second half, and he gets to about the 35, and the gates just open, right? And I start laughing as he gets to the 40 and plus territory, and Archer on the air starts going, oh, my God, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. And by the time we get the poor kid to the end zone, we're both, you know, bent over laughing in the booth that the kid has run a kickback. So if that's trampling me, yeah, that's trampling me. But, no, most of the time when we are on the air and we end up talking over one another, it's because something's happened in the game or, you know, and it's that's kind of the – when you work together and blessed to work together as long as we have, that's part of the thing that happens when you get going like that.
The big news of the day in the ACC, we have –
we have games times. And we have kick times.
We have kickoff times. North Carolina. I guess you can't really complain about a noon kick if there aren't going to be any fans or tailgating. That's a noon kick against Syracuse. Duke at right. Notre Dame, a 2:30 kick on NBC.
USA, by the way, South Florida. Oh, no, Duke at Notre Dame. South Florida the next week's on USA, I guess.
Yeah, Clemson's at Wake Forest, 7:30 ABC. At this point, I would
That's the Herb Street Fowler game, by the way.
That's right, ABC. I would be surprised if College Game Day isn't making their first trip to Winston-Salem. I know I've put this out on social media today, and just
it's one of the schools they've never been to.
Right. It's just a pouring response from Wake Forest fans saying, don't come. Don't come because we want the first time. We want to be there for it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right.
I mean, when I'm looking at the schedule, there are only four games featuring Power 5 matchups. It's Cuse, UNC, Duke, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Florida State. And there's Clemson and Wake Forest, and I know producers from that show who love going to places they've never been before. Why not Wake Forest and Clemson for that game on September the 12th?
It makes a lot of sense. Clemson's preseason number one, obviously, in the AP poll, which is, there's plenty of questions about kind of how this is all going to go down. So why not take the number one team in the country and, you know, face off against a Wake team that, by the way, you know, is in a pretty good stretch here. I mean, despite the bowl loss a year ago, you know, Dave Clawson's done a fantastic job. So I could see where there would be a lot of interest both ways, and especially the fact that, you know, you're one of two leagues really playing on the surface that day. You know, in terms of the conference games, Syracuse, Carolina, the noon game on the ACC network seems to be, you know, the one of intrigue because Carolina's figured to be one of those. Had Virginia Tech, NC State held serve, that to me probably would have been the game that potentially drew, at least from a conference perspective, one. But when you look at Clemson and Wake Forest, that makes a lot of sense. And it's actually, you know what, regardless of how you look at it, you know, Josh, from a standpoint of fans or no fans, It's a really good idea to go ahead and showcase two teams like that if you can.
Yeah, and also, Lee Corso, you're 85 years old. If you're going to be there, God willing, I hope we have Corso putting on headgear and such. I think if I'm Corso, I just want to put on heads I've never had a chance to put on before. Just put on the Demon Deacon. Just do it. Like, you're 85, put on the Demon Deacon head. I know nobody is going to pick the Deeks to beat Clemson, but hey, you could say you did it, and I'm just curious if the bow tie that's stapled to the Deacon's chin, if that's included on the helmet.
I don't think he's going to put Wake on, but it's a it's a good thought.
Do you have assignments?
I don't know what he's going to do, but we'll see.
Do you have assignments yet?
I do not have anything confirmed. No, okay. No. We've got the schedule. I saw the schedule the same time you guys did. Usually we get it, you know, 30 minutes earlier. But this is 2020, man. You got to be prepared for anything at
this
point.
This time of year on Friday, do I have this right? On Friday, you guys are going to announce the All ACC preseason team. Maybe later.
Yeah,
this
you're
week?
Getting information. You're again. I got that information about 30 minutes ago. So yes, we are going to the All-ACC team on Friday.
Here's what I find compelling about this announcement that's going to come out of your guys' mouth on Packer and Durham later this week.
All right.
Notre Dame fans, they're dealing with this for the first time.
Sure.
I'm used to people getting mad about their punter, their kicker, their corner not getting the love that they want.
That's right.
When it comes to a preseason all-conference team.
Right.
How do you think Notre Dame's going to handle trying to share some of the spotlight here?
Well, I look at it like the precedent that's being set. You can say one thing or another, but how about this? Whoever, you know, whether it's, you know, Kyle Hamilton in the secondary or, you know, Jafar Ferguson, whoever, right? I mean, somebody in the offensive line, Tommy Kramer would be a good selection. He'll probably be first-team All-ACC if somebody's, you know, reading their analytics.
He had my vote.
Yeah, I mean, he was certainly one of mine. I think you're looking at, and I jokingly said this with Pete Sampson of The Athletic, who was with us last week. Hey, Pete, somebody's making history from Notre Dame this year because they're going to be the first ever all-conference player. I mean, you can have your Johnny Lujacks and your Paul Hornings and your Frank Leahys. I got your first ever all-conference player, you know. So it's going to be interesting, but it's also one of those things, too, where – you know, let's see how it unfolds once we get the storylines developed, Josh. Let's see what happens once we get, you know, to be honest with you, the way the season can go here. You know, how's it going to look on paper? What's it going to be like with, you know, conference games and, you know, by the way, the occasional throw-in non-conference game, that kind of deal. So, you know, we'll see here. It's going to be interesting, though. There's no question.
Wes Durham's with us here. Shoot him a follow at Wes Durham. Listen to Packer and Durham. Watch Packer and Durham 7 to 10 in the mornings on the ACC network. Before we get to John Thompson's passing yesterday at 78 years old, we've had great voices on to reflect on his passing. Tubby Smith an hour ago, Leonard Hamilton before that. I want to put a bow on the football discussion with North Carolina because we had Mac Brown on the show yesterday, and he says, expectations haven't changed much, except for the fact in the spring we set a goal of winning the Coastal Division. Well, now the Coastal Division isn't a thing anymore. If you do the adjusted poll of the AP, the Tar Heels are the 12th ranked team of in America among teams that are expected to play this year. With 10 of 11 starters back on offense, a quarterback and a coach that seem to be very well respected across the entire sport right now, and Chaz Surratt, who's a tremendous defensive player. What is a fair expectation for the Tar Heels following 7-6?
Well, given kind of the way the second edition schedule fell for them, I'll be honest with you. I would say there's nothing wrong with thinking about 9. There's nothing wrong with thinking about 9-2, in my opinion.
That's a year.
Yeah, it is. But look, here's the thing, and I'll go back to what I say on air sometimes. You're only asking them to get a little bit better on defense. I mean, you're not asking – I mean, offensively, you know, Pack goes with 18 gazillion yards for Sam Howell, but you're really not asking them to do a whole lot more than what they're doing. You got two great backs. You've got four back in the offensive line. You got a kid with a cannon at quarterback. I think you've got three of the better receivers in the ACC, and one of them gets no love whatsoever in Bo Corrales.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And I think Bo Corrales, you know, this is nothing against Daz Newsome and Dyami Brown. This is just having them once last year. I thought Bo Corrales was the most impressive of the three because I think Bo Corrales understands space in the red zone. I think he understands kind of where to go, how to use his body, the whole bit. I mean – I've talked to people, you know, in and around the next level who are really impressed with the way he's developed. So, look, I think if they can get a little better on defense, then, yeah, and with guys like Storm Duck and Wolfolk and guys like that, they got a chance. And, you know, just don't get ahead of yourself. And that's probably the one big benefit I think Coach Brown brings to the table. But, see, here's the cute thing about the ACC, Josh. We got three or four teams like this. I mean, you can say the same thing about Louisville. Can Malcolm Brown, their defensive coordinator, get them a little bit better on defense with C.J. Avery and some of those guys, Dorian Etheridge, who was banged up last year? Because, again, offensively, and Scott Satterfield's talking about Mikael Cunningham being one of his best quarterbacks ever. I mean, you saw some at App that were pretty solid now.
The guy who maybe won that game in 2007 was decent.
Absolutely. Yeah, no kidding. So let's start thinking about where Louisville might be. And again, how does the schedule work for them? And then, you know, at some point in this, Dark Horse Pittsburgh, Florida State improvement, Miami, to tell the truth with Miami, is going to happen this year. I mean, you've got an explosive guy in De'Eriq King, who, quite frankly, was responsible for about 50 touchdowns 2 years ago. I mean, he can really play. But Miami and Florida State have both suffered from the ills in the offensive line the last couple of years. So, look, I think that Clemson's the favorite. Carolina and Notre Dame will be number two in the preseason poll. Okay, Carolina should be third. The question is Virginia Tech, Carolina, Florida State, Miami, Pittsburgh, Louisville. I mean, here again, I'm rolling off a bunch of teams. That's a good thing for the ACC, by the way. That's not a bad thing that I'm sitting here talking about Clemson, Notre Dame, and then a bunch of other teams. That's a really good thing. And you know why it's a good thing? Because we have it in basketball, and everybody talks about how good it is, right?
Yeah.
So when we have it in football, it can't be a bad thing. Follow me?
I follow you.
Yeah.
It's something that people do. Hey, if there's a lot of depth, if Wake Forest is somehow high up in the standings, you have people mocking the league for it, but you don't attach the same things for basketball. West Durham with us here. And I'll add a stat here when it comes to quarterbacks. There were only three quarterbacks last year in college football who threw more touchdown passes than Sam Howell did. Joe Burrow, Anthony Gordon, Washington State, and Justin Fields. None of those quarterbacks are going to be playing college football this year. And here's what makes it next step.
Well, wait a second. The Big Ten, you need to check with Robert. We could have had another Big Ten announcement here.
We'll check
hour.
With Dan Patrick because he's trying to put on his reporting hat there in the last few hours. But here's what's more interesting than that. Sam Howell's number four on that list, number one among guys returning expected to play. Number five and number six, Trevor Lawrence and Ian Book.
Right.
So a lot of firepower coming back at the quarterback position.
And don't forget, Mikael Cunningham is one more pass completion from being one of the top-rated passers returning in all of college football because he would have qualified for that. So
that
you know, it's all that stuff that comes together, man.
A lot of really good quarterbacks. So the thing I've heard a lot of, I heard Roy Williams on our station with Adam Gold yesterday sharing how close the bond was between him and Big John, but more so commenting on how close Coach Smith was, Dean Smith was, with John Thompson. It seems to be notorious, a really close relationship that they had, considering how close you were to that program, even at that time, and your dad as well. Just how close did you know Dean Smith to actually be with Big John?
Well, I think that the first indicator is that you have to remember that Coach Thompson was the guardian of a player named Donald Washington. And I'm sure Roy talked about this in his comments earlier. The first interaction that Coach Smith had with Coach Thompson was in the recruiting of Donald Washington. John and his wife Gwendolyn were the guardians of Donald Washington. And Donald Washington came to Carolina. He had a star-crossed career. Injured for most of it, but Donald Washington bridged that friendship, if you will. So then when the Georgetown program, and people who aren't old enough are not going to remember this, but Georgetown used to play in the McDonough Gymnasium on campus. This is long before they went to the Capitol Center and started playing, okay? They used to play in McDonough Gym, and they had a player named John Duren, Bebe Duren. And Georgetown, in fact, you can see it in the 82 National Championship game. It almost looks like an inter-squad game because Carolina's wearing their white jerseys and Georgetown's wearing their light blue, right?
Yeah.
Well, Georgetown's jerseys originally were light blue and white like Carolina, a lot like Carolina, the side panels on the shorts and everything else. Well, Coach Thompson used to work Coach Smith's camps in the summer when he was early in his Georgetown career, and there was a coach at DeMatha, an assistant coach named Frank Fuqua that used to come down and work camp, and Coach Thompson was there. I mean, I can remember that happening. And then the first year I went to camp was 76 when the Olympic team was in camp at Granville Towers, and Coach Thompson was there. And the Olympic team would practice, and Coach Thompson would be at one of the gyms. Now, he wasn't going to be at my gym because I was at the 9, 10, 11 gym or whatever. But, you know, John Thompson was around, and you kind of got to see Coach Thompson. And I remembered him as the guy coached Georgetown who was on TV, because Georgetown's games used to be on old WTTG Channel 5 in D.C., which was on the cable in Cary, North Carolina for some reason. But this goes to show you how that bridge of friendship got built. And it was easy, I think, for Coach Smith. And Coach Smith felt – I do know this. My dad told the story after New Orleans in 82. Coach Smith, look, he wanted to win the national championship, but he was uncomfortable with doing it at the cost of his friend. So 2 years later, when Georgetown beat Houston in 84 at the Kingdome in Seattle, I remember my dad that summer saying that, you know, the part about the 82, but then on that degree, when Georgetown beat Houston, nobody was happier for John Thompson than Dean Smith. And the Carolina staff was thrilled for the Georgetown staff, right?
Yeah.
And it just shows you the respect. Coach Smith had a major influence in, you know, Patrick Ewing went to Georgetown. He didn't go to Carolina. They had some of the same guys. I mean, look, they recruited J.R. Reed. Both schools did. They recruited Alonzo Mourning. Both schools. Both schools recruited Patrick Ewing. But some went to Chapel Hill. Some didn't. And at the end of the day, their friendship was really grounded. And Coach Thompson and Coach Krzyzewski, I think, were two of the guys in the industry who were closer with Coach Smith after he retired than maybe when they were coaching. They still had great respect for one another, but they became closer in terms of their friendship. And then when Coach Smith got sick, I think Coach Thompson, you may recall a year or two before Coach Smith passed away, John Thompson came to Raleigh to do an NCAA regional. And as I understood it, he spent time with Coach Smith then. And then Coach Thompson was obviously supposed to speak at the memorial service and was unable to make it to Chapel Hill, and that's when JT3 showed up. But, yeah, the respect and the friendship there was as strong and as good as you can have in this industry, and really inspiring when you think about it, because I think John Thompson realized that, you know, Dean Smith was a guy who wanted – really a lot of the things that people want now. And, you know, I've been thinking about Coach Smith a lot, especially in all the stuff that's been going on, because Coach Smith was one of those guys who thought about that stuff in the 1960s because of the influence of his mother and dad, who were both teachers growing up in Kansas.
That is amazing storytelling as always, Wes. And I appreciate you sharing it with us. I look forward to hearing what you have in store 7-10 tomorrow in the ACC network.
I can tell you, Brennan Armstrong tomorrow is Brennan Armstrong is signed up to be on the show tomorrow. Okay. The quarterback at Virginia
just was named the starting quarterback. His first game is going to be the Commonwealth Cup.
It is. EJ Manuel will be with us, and we're going to do some. We're going to do some what I call news and information segments. And we've had one already.
We have some of those.
Bob Weissman was with us last week from Duke to talk about, you know, the decision-making process, not having fans, what have they gone through type thing. Brad Wortham of Virginia Tech is going to join us tomorrow along those same lines of, okay, you're going to have 1,000 people. What's all that mean? You know, how does the marketing work for this? How do you, you know, how do you decide ticketing plans, things like that? And then at some point in the next 4 or 5 days, we're going to talk to a sports information guy in the ACC about the world they now live in, because – covering games and media information and all the things that we just kind of accepted as the status quo, Josh.
Yeah.
That's not status quo anymore, bro.
No, it is not. And I've been learning that over the last few days. I'll look forward to hearing which lucky SID is going to be on Packer and Durham.
All right, my man.
Thanks for doing this. It's good to hear from you, man.
Anytime. Take care. Always good. And Robert's doing an outstanding job of keeping you in the harness.
All right, Robert, how much did he pay you? How much did he pay you to say that?
The money Robert, is in the mail.
I think Robert just needs to look at the contract terms. That's all he's got to worry about.
It's not here yet.
There he is.
Oh, okay. Take care, guys. See you soon. All right, be well.
From Cartersville, Georgia, that is Wes Durham.